Hello, and welcome to A Life Economy. I'm Cosmo Scharf, and on today's episode, we have my friend Zanka, who's a futurist and the co-founder of Triple Smart Labs. She's identified something really interesting, which is how individuals don't have the same resources as companies. So she's created this lab in Argentina where she is bringing all these really cool pieces of gear and spiritual technology to the people through what she's calling citizen-driven science and human-centered design. We talk about everything from exponential change and automation to this concept of a passion-based economy. And finally, she's really big into VR and AR, so of course we get a little trippy and philosophical talking about metaverse and simulation theory. It's a really fun conversation. I'm super grateful for Zanka to have shared the time with me. If you're enjoying this podcast, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. That would be amazing. But for now, I bring you Zanka.
As we look at what's coming down the pipe in the world today, we start to realize that we don't know what's going to happen in the future. So many things are starting to converge when you're talking about AI and XR and all these things. And we're running out of time, really, to get out in front of that curve of change and kind of plan for what we want. And some of that infrastructure, I often say that I'm a plumber, you know, because the infrastructure from which we build this new spatial web and all these other systems, this new economy, right, these new schools, all we know that the hospitals, all these major institutions are starting to fall apart because they need to expand and change and grow. So it's very important that we encourage as many people to move into this new field of becoming futurists, right? Because it lets us preview what we want and it lets us lay the groundwork for what's to come.
Awesome. Yeah, the two things that stood out to me that were really cool, the notion of being a plumber and also that everyone could and should be a futurist. Would you agree with that?
Yes, yes, wholeheartedly.
And why is that so important?
Well, exponential change is a concept that we've been fairly familiar with, but it's something that changed my life. I was like a before and after. I started to read the ideas that were contained in Ray Kurzweil and Toffler's and all these people's ideas. They're saying, wait a minute, you know, this is sort of this idea that exponential change is nonlinear. So if you have 30 steps, you can walk 30 steps, boom, 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 boom. But 30 can also, if you're duplicating, can also get you to a billion in 30 steps, right? So it's kind of like I felt like we're all on the deck of the ship, like having, you know, our you know, playing music and whatever, not realizing that all this stuff was starting to come down the pipe, right? So whether you're talking, I mean, Kai-Fu Lee says that in 15 years, 40% of all jobs can be automated.
Wow.
Okay. Who's getting ready for that? Obviously, the government's not the most nimble person, you know, institution to do that, right? So we can't rely on them. So, and the same thing, you know, you're talking about climate change and all these things. So it requires everybody to jump in. We're talking about 14-year-olds. We're talking about all of us to jump in and say, okay, great. Because the good thing about what's happening right now is I'm super optimistic because we did just get this treasure trove, massive amount of really powerful technology and solutions dropped in our lap. So the future is telling us, okay, you've got 15 years till the singularity, all these things are going to be happening. And what are you going to do about it? But you've also got this like this table full of the most magical and powerful technology. And now is the chance to not sit around and pretend like nothing's happening or pretend that someone else is going to deal with it. The chance is to say, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
We've got this.
Right.
And really apply ourselves and join yeah, in.
That's awesome. When you know, you look at all the risks and threats in the world, it can be pretty scary and overwhelming. But what I like about what you're saying is that we can use this as an opportunity to grow and to change and to transform the systems that are not serving us anymore.
Right. And if you look at exponential technology, you can say, well, just because we can't solve this right now doesn't mean that we are not going to be able to solve this in 5 years from now. But like I said, we got to get into the driver's seat.
Right.
And the future's getting better. Of course it's getting better. I mean, there's, you know, you've got all of this stuff saying that it's not, but I mean, you look at women, like it's almost like we got amnesia over the past 100 years. I'm thinking, gosh, my life 100 years ago, it would not be good. I do not want to go back there. I don't want to go back 200 years even, you know? So if you step back and see the forest from the trees, you start to realize how lucky we are, right? We're moving from this, you know, top-down hierarchical world into a world where we're all going to get world-class educations. We're all going to be able to decide. We're all going to have autonomy, right? Yeah. So the trends are awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's almost like a battle of narratives or a battle of perspectives in that, you know, what you're describing is this really exciting optimism for the future, which I share. But at the same time, and I think you would agree as well, you know, when we look at the news and we look at what's going on in the world, you know, in just taking, you know, America, for example, you know, it can seem pretty hopeless. So how do you balance those two worldviews?
Well, first of all, you have to know where the source is coming from, right? So, I mean, nobody is going to sell news if it's not going to make your heart start racing, right? It's just, so that's one thing, right? But you also, we're in the midst of writing a new narrative, right? And so it's important that we light a fire under ourselves and say, look, the system as it is, it's not going to function for that much longer. And one of the things, and what do we want to happen, right? And that's something that's so hard for us because it's almost like we're hardwired for fear. I used to like close my eyes and think about the future and all the things I didn't want. And I could write like volumes, Big Brother, World War III, all this stuff, you know? But then when you think about what you want in the future, it's really hard because you have nothing to build it upon, right? We're writing from scratch. This is tabula rasa. This is like, and what I found is that one idea that you might have, I might be able to build on that. And then another person might be able to build on that and another person. So really the task at hand is to start experimenting in small pieces and let that popcorn effect start to build realities, right?
Yeah, I love that. You know, we're so used to this negative fear-based narrative on the news cycle all the time. And what has happened is that has made us unable to really see the positive version of the future. And what I like about what you're saying is like, we need to just simply ignore all the crap that we see through our screens and stay laser focused on what it is that we actually want to achieve. And that's in large part, you know, huge inspiration for what this, you know, the main focus of this podcast is.
Yeah. And it applies, you know, when you look at these nesting patterns, it applies to our life too, because someone told me for every negative thought you have, try to put 4 positive thoughts. So for me, I wake up with a day, I'm worried about this. Oh, I'm not going to finish this. Oh, no. You know, I'm not good enough. This, all that kind of negativity, same with the news. But I mean, it happens within ourselves. So we're going to be correcting everything all at once. We're going to be correcting our own ability to shape the world, right? We didn't have that opportunity before where it was like the king decided everything, you know? So now you've got, you know, people that are standing up, they're saying, wait a minute, this, we can do something better than this. And then they provide an inspiration for other people. So when you can inspire yourself, because fear is a vortex and it's very easy to get sucked down there. I've been there, you know?
Hole.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that in a speech a while ago.
We have to lift ourselves up as well.
It really does feel like that. It's like this, it creates this negative feedback loop where one thought leads to the next, leads to the next. And you're all of a sudden you're just caught in this like shit storm of like negativity.
Yeah. Yeah. The same thing as love. Love's the opposite. So, you know, you start to feel that and then everything looks rosy. But so we need to be mindful of that.
Yeah. And to your point earlier, there is sort of like this Russian nesting doll level of change that is happening right now.
on the personal level, on the social level, on the national level, and international level, on a planetary level, in the solar system. You know, you just keep going out and out and out and out, right? And it's very true. I mean, it does, you know, when we talk about, we want the world to be better. We want to have some kind of consciousness revolution, whatever that might look like to you. Where does that start? It starts here on the inside, right? And making whatever changes we need to make to really look at ourselves truthfully and look at our lives and look at our relationships. And from there, become the person that we're really meant to be. And that will have massive ripple effects in our society.
Exactly. And that's really, you definitely control that realm, you know, how you show up. You know, I saw this thing that said, you don't have to agree with someone to be kind, you know? So it's almost like we need to have like a U2 revolution. You know, we had the Me Too and then now it's the U2 because you don't know. You walk by someone's street, you don't know what their day was. You don't know what
sponsored
their childhood.
Sponsored by Bono.
Right. You know, it's like, yeah, you don't know. You have no idea. And people, it's okay if they want to support Republicans. It's okay if they want to support Democrats. It's their choice. That's okay. It's okay. It's okay that we all have these choices and we have to treat each other with kindness on along the way.
Yeah. What do you mean by you two?
Well, so, you know, it's sort of, you know, I started to realize, you know, I started to feel a lot of empathy for everybody in the world. Even like they say that the people that need the most love are the hardest to love.
Wow.
Right. So I started to think about that because it's true. Like you don't know what that person, that battle that person is going through. So really sympathy and kindness is about the best that we can do for each other.
Yeah. You know, the first person that comes to mind is Trump, of course. And it's like, amidst all of the horribly nasty things he said and done, we still need to find space for compassion. And how important is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Compassion and dialogue and everything, because that's the basis for this complexity that we have. It's not easy to bring the world together with visions of where we're going and things like that. But it's going to require that we search for these win-wins, that we look for these overlaps, that we feel okay about expressing our ideas, you know, that we don't stay silent, that we don't stay quiet, that we know what we want, you know, and allow other people to know what they want.
Yeah, I liked what you were saying, that we can control who we are. And then the converse of that is like, we can't really control what we see in the New York Times to a certain extent, right? You know, we turn on our phones, we turn on our computers and we're like, oh, this happened, this news story happened. And you immediately just feel terrible about it, whatever that might be. But what you can, what we do have responsibility for is how we show up in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah. And I always, you know, that whole concept always bothered me because I was like, but we have to do more and we do have to do more. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you don't know that the one thing that you do, maybe this podcast caused a ripple effect or whatever it is, right? So your strength is inspiring other people to show up honestly.
Yeah.
Right. And and one of the things that's overwhelming about the situation we're in right now with the future, right? And all this technological change, it's going to get crazy, right? So you can kind of see the older generation now already like hands off. They're like, I can't even deal with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's funny.
So that's going to happen to us and even the younger generation at some point. It's just going to feel super overwhelming because the change is going to happen so fast and we're not going to have control over it, right? So that's the worst. So then you have to notice that we're going to go through this world of hyper change, very, very, very fast changes, very unstable, you know, makes you feel very unstable, but we're going to have to stay grounded and we're going to have to realize that we are pioneers, all of us right now. When we can create a prototype of saying, you know, I told my boss that I wanted to work Monday, Tuesday, and then Thursday, Friday and work 10 hours instead of 8, you know, like, or whatever it is, you've created a template that other people can push into and live into. So the more that we can get true with what we want, instead of just being a sheep, you know what I mean? The more space you're creating for other people that are going to follow you. And I myself always wanted the white horse to save me. I always, you know, it's like I wanted to be a sheep, because it's not easy trying to design stuff from scratch. And so we have to be kind with ourselves, but then also be very courageous.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the white horse, because I'm reminded of what is known, I think, as the Rainbow Bridge prophecies. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
And it's like, it's a metaphor. It's an ancient story about a race of horses, of four horses. It's a metaphor. And each horse represents a different thing. I might butcher it because it's been a while since I looked it up. But I'm pretty sure the white horse represented technology and kind of the conquest over nature. So it's interesting that you chose that color specifically. And then the idea is like we want the golden horse to win the race, which represents like the best possible future for humanity. It's a really, really interesting prophecy that is kind of relevant to the times that we're in right now, where we're kind of through our actions and through our thoughts, we're placing bets and kind of on each horse, and we're magnetizing our reality towards each of these different divergent paths forward.
Yeah. And it is complicated. There's not just one way forward, right? The more that we can find win-wins, the more that we can thrive, the more that we can look at the full picture. Because we start to realize that when part of us falls down, that part brings all of us, the other people, down too. And
right.
when we can lift, it lifts everybody up.
Totally.
So there's this feeling that the more holistically we can deal with things, and the more the root cause, getting down to the root causes, that's where we're going to have really great impact.
Yeah. And somehow this ideology of connectedness, or not even ideology, it's just this knowledge, is somehow forgotten or completely missing from our culture. Why do you think that is? What's going on? Why do we see each other as separate beings? And what are the ramifications of such a belief?
Well, it's kind of like what we just talked about. We're so interested in surviving, mm-hmm. right? That you're not really worried about everyone else, because you're trying to just at least stand up and be stable and mm-hmm. deal with the challenge of life. But as we start to realize that, we're just on this one planet together, you know, and we're going to sink or swim. So any one of us has the ability to change the entire world for the better or the worse.
Sure.
Right? So it's this weird situation, right? So you could have one person press the button.
Yeah.
And that's it, you know? And it comes back to this idea that, I mean, if we've got automation coming in and 40% of the jobs are going to be taken, right? And you're going to have rioting, like they say that like there'll even be rioting in the streets just because of the lack of jobs for truck drivers. Right. So if we don't participate in solution finding right now together, then of course that's going to affect your life, right? Because you're in the midst of it. So there's also this idea that instead of having, you know, we're moving away from this hierarchical way of being in society, right? Where you're just following directions or you're just trying to grasp it, where we really need to give the entire map to everybody, right? To give them the autonomy, because we're going to make intelligence decisions if we all know what's at stake for everybody, right? But if we're kind of in the dark and just isolating decisions around our own life, right? Or our own little corner, then we're not able to make decisions that benefit the whole.
Yeah. What do you mean by map?
Well, I believe that, you know, you've got governments and people, they have these big network operations center where you can see the trends and see where things are going. But that information, that navigational information, has to be in the hands of you and I as well.
Right.
Because we can't make decisions without it. There's
a really good point.
Amazing TED Talk Kate Rosworth talks about. She says that she's like, you know, we had this idea that the GDP for countries needed to grow by a certain percentage, and all the countries were competing to be in the G20. You know, it's like grow. But she says, wait a minute, we need like a donut in network operations center type of an idea where people are falling in the hole if they don't have the basics, right, to thrive. And then we'll fall over the outer hole if we're running the earth down. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not going to survive. So, it really comes to the idea that in a system of cells, you want each cell to have the data of the entire organism.
Holographically.
Right. So then, boom, everybody can switch and react and adapt.
Right.
Because the name of the game right now is adaptation, right? So we're totally going to get all these changes thrown into into our field. And if we can't adapt because we don't have the full picture, we're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's a great diagram. And if we can find an image, we can link to it in the show notes. Definitely worth checking out. So you allude to these massive changes and these really exciting technologies. Could you describe some of those?
Yeah, so even education, you know, the school system as it is now is not going to function much longer, right? Kids don't want to go and have a person in the front of the room telling them what to think anymore. You know what I mean? So you have this total breakdown. Yeah. You know what I mean? And, you know, same thing with, you know, you look at we've got computers right now that can work better than a lawyer or better than a team of board certified physicians, understanding what problem you have or what legal loopholes, you know, you're facing. So all of a sudden, that's a huge change in the way we do things. Okay. But those things aren't incorporated into our lifestyle yet. So whether it's losing jobs or whether it's being able to have a world-class education online and have a computer adapt to your entire learning systems, or whether you can, you know, hook yourself up to a machine and realize, how to map your subconscious, you know what I mean? And what tweaks you need to make. I mean, these are all major changes that are going to affect all of us.
Right. And you have a company, Triple Smart Labs, that seems to be looking to address some of these issues and changes. Could you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. So as a futurist, I was very focused on big picture thinking. Right, realizing that if we were all caught up in the minutia, we were going to miss the major things that we were going to need to know about. Once I felt like I understand the big picture, then I focused on what I called gap theory. Like, where are the gaps? Where do we need to apply our money, our time, our resources to allow for flourishing? And one of the things I started to look at is that you look at companies and you look at governments, I was sort of like, well, how did we get so far off track right now? You know what I mean? And thinking about that. And I thought, well, you know, companies have a different why than individuals, but individuals have no resources. They don't have locomotion. They don't have support. So I'm thinking we need labs that support individuals, because in the end, if the products and the services and the systems in the world don't make our lives better, right? Then we're going on down the wrong road, right? So Triple Smart Labs is this idea that we decentralize everything, right? So instead of having a makerspace, right, where all the geeky people come to the makerspace because they want to tweak on the tech, you take the technology to the yoga studio or to the individual guy who's like, I really want to know what this does. You know, you allow the equipment to go out, and we rotate it every 3 months. So we started the lab in Argentina. We took a bunch of really, really cutting edge technology, a biowell that reads your auras and, you know, all
super
this
cool
stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know, holographic monitors from Looking Glass, things like that. brain sensing Muse headsets.
Yeah, I gotta admit, they might, like, that was some really cool stuff, even for me. And you kind of just brought it to quote unquote everyday people. What was their reaction? What did they think of all this stuff?
Well, I mean, we're still in the phase of like wanting to be sheep and be like, well, I don't know what, they don't know what to do with it either, to a large extent. You know what I mean? But we're starting to realize, like, so the BioWell went to someone who'd studied Carillion photography all their life. She's a PhD.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? So she knows. And so here was like, she's like, I can't even get the Carillion photography stuff like exposed, you know, like processed anymore, the film, because you used to have to send it to, but it's, so this was like a digital, you know, a step for her. And now she is at a time in her life where she wants to teach a bunch of people. And now we want to get another BioWell for next year to then put in a centralized place that would allow all of her students a place to see patients, right? So that's another bridge that we need to offer people. Like, maybe they don't have money to rent us, you right. know, a place to see their clients.
And for people that likely don't know, what is a BioWell?
So it's a photo electronic device that basically sends a bunch of electrons through your finger. So you put all your fingers down. And then it will tell you where your energy is bunching or blocking, because we are these energetic systems. And over time, it's basically to help you deal with diseases that you don't yet have before you have them, right? Because if your energy is getting blocked in your throat again and again and again, eventually over time, you're going to get thyroid. You know what I mean? So it'll basically tell you what organs are being affected, and where you might apply different things in your life. You know, so it's really great. They told me you need to drink more water. You know, you need to focus. You know, it's like it's really stunning, and that's what we're moving into now. We're starting to understand things that we couldn't see before, but now we can understand. So, I mean, I also felt like there were so many phenomenon about our bodies that I felt that all the research was too wacky for, college professors even to want to deal with their research grants. And the government kind of has studies on them where you're talking about remote viewing, all these things. And I was like, wow, you know, citizen scientists are the perfect people to investigate this, because they don't have these reputations they have to protect. And you look at phenomenological research on the internet, and it's like, we did a study of 40 people. You know, it's these tiny studies are 20 people. So we need these platforms that allow a kit to be saying, oh, we tried this meditation headset and we learned that by listening to this music, people got right into the zone of heart coherence, you know, like, okay. And then we pass that kit on to the next group. You know what I mean? So this idea of a decentralized and then human centered design. So allowing the end user to have a chance to design systems that were beneficial and then share those with other people. Oh, this worked for me. Like, we have a stencil cutter. It was like super popular. So all these artists were able to make cut stencils out like in 30 seconds instead of 2 hours. And we just sent a bunch of stencils to another city. So there's starting to be like city exchanges. You know what I mean? It wasn't cool. A project that we originated, but we were able to participate.
So, that's really neat.
So yeah.
That's really exciting. Sounds really amazing. This notion of citizen-driven science. What is the ultimate potential for it? Why are you involved with, why are you trying to make it happen?
Well, like I said, I feel like individuals have a different why. And so supporting people in this way, we can really tap into passion and close the loop on some of these passion projects that people have. You know what I mean? So they say, I really want to do this, but I don't have access to this $2,000 machine. Well, let's try to get one. And then when you're not using it, let's let another person use it. So, I mean, that happens all the time here in the US. People buy something, they use it for a couple times, and then it just sits collecting dust. So computers can really help us. Like, efficiency is one of the things that we've got. It says opportunity, you know, with like capital letters. Like, computers will make the world efficient. It's not that we don't have enough resources on the planet. It's not that we need to do population control. Like, that's the furthest thing from the truth. It's, we just are going to have to get organized better. And computers are perfect at that. So whether you're talking about amassing studies to say like, oh, who was doing clairvoyance studies? Oh, well, these 10 people did it. Do we need more people to jump on? Or whether it's how did you, I mean, it can even go down to the basics in life. Like, how do you calm yourself down? Like, how do you stay on your, you know, exercise routine? Or how, you know, how do you become more positive in your life? That data is really critical that we share it and that we can see it all in one place. Because once you put machine learning behind that, you can say, oh, well, I'm this age, I live in California, and then it's going to give you some of those road, you know, those roads forward to say, well, like these 100 people tried this and it worked. You know what I mean? So organizing information in a better way and then really giving people the chance to run with what they're passionate about and then sharing the results on the other end, because it's not a company. There's things that don't have to be monetized, you know, like our health. Like how is it that we live in a world today we can't solve drug addiction? How is that even possible?
The monetization of industries that should not be monetized is a massive issue when you talk about healthcare, education, et cetera. You know, these are things that should be provided to everyone for free without a profit motive. And yet somehow capitalism has been able to kind of weave its way into every little crook and nanny of our civilization.
Right. And that's why we're going to bring back balance through these hybrid systems, right? Where you can have an and, you know, and a both, you know what I mean? Still want to go to that hospital when you get hit by the car, but there's all this other stuff that we could bring about through citizen science. Like there's a lot of things that I feel like sometimes that people are walking around with a broken heart. You know what I mean? And that causes them to feel sick or that causes them, you know what I mean? All these things happen.
Probably
so,
many people.
How, like I said, like how is it that in the day and age we're in right now, we've got all these people addicted to opiates. Like how is that, how can we not solve that? We can, you know, but it's dealing with their traumas in life have never been resolved and they've been able to live their entire life with a trauma. And you can look at alternative medicine, and you can look at different, whether it's constellation therapy or meditation or like all these Eastern practices. So how do we bring those in? How do we do research around them? And how do we provide those for free? Maybe there's like a broken heart clinic or something that's like free healthcare in that sense. And that saves us billions, you know?
I want to go back to this notion of empowering people's passions. You've mentioned to me earlier about this concept of a passion-based economy, and I would love to hear you describe what that is.
Yeah, so I never really got into my passions until later in life because I kind of was like, well, I still got to pay the rent and all this stuff, you know? But when I started to tap into it, it's like I got so happy and I was so good at what I was doing that people were like, wow, she's glowing and they want to give you money. They want to hire you. They want to do stuff. So I realized that there's kind of like, there's the 80-20 rule, right? You can get 80% of your work done at 20% of the time or what, you know what I mean? So there's this idea that a passionate person might be way more valuable than someone that's not passionate, right? So there's a value to that. There's a monetized value of having that, right? So when we look at all the things that we're going to, all these like challenges that we know the world's problems now, it's becoming very clear. So when we look at that set of challenges, applying passionate people to solve that is our best, you know, that's our best, the bang for the buck is there, right? So I often thought, well, why don't we have a universal basic income flavor called the passion-based economy, where you get not just you just blanket an entire population with $1,000 a month. Why not pay people who've applied to solve certain things, whether it's opiate addiction or whether it's reimagining schools or whether it's how to calm yourself in a chaotic world, you know, whatever it is, right? And then share, and then you've got that, you've paid for that. So then that becomes, you can share those resources with everybody. And that's so powerful because we're living in this unusual world where it's not material. So I don't have to build a, you know, building a table with wood and I can only make how many a day, like, right? You build it once and then you can share it a million times and you're still not, you know, having to spend the money on the bare materials of the table. So, So I really think that it's important that we start to encourage people to develop their passions. And I even see it as possibly, you know, the Google 20% project was this idea that they would let their engineers spend one day a week working on their passion projects. And that is ended up being the bread and butter of everything that they created. Right? Gmail, you know, like all these products, you know, became billion-dollar products were born out of this passionate need to solve that. So, and now they're doing Genius Hour in school where kids are bringing their passion. They're learning to be passionate about things at a young age, right? So what if we decided that there was going to be a 20% passion project in intercompany passion projects, right? Where you take a company that's great at communicating and making media with a group of scientists that have just discovered something interesting about our consciousness or whatever, you know what I mean? And you put those together, right? And then that passion project is also given to humanity, right? So I think there's something in that, and I think that it's something that we haven't spent enough time focusing on.
Yeah, I really love this idea. It's really powerful and so, so true. When we look at the variety of issues and challenges that we face as a society, I think a lot of them could be summed up or consolidated into people not following their passions. And to touch on how you opened, you know, how you started answering the question about, you know, kind of the personal story of you not following your passions until sort of later in life. You know, think of how many other people are kind of in that situation where we have this environment that just simply does not support or actively discourages us from following what we truly care about. And yet when we follow our dreams, that is it kind of opens up the universe to us because now we're in flow with our true purpose and our true mission and our gift. We're able to give our gift to the world. And ultimately, you know, some might say that's really the only, that's what we're here for at that kind of the highest level.
Yeah. You know, I just heard this interview the other day where someone who studies people that do palliative care, you know, they care for people that are dying. And the number one regret of people was to not listen to their inner self and follow the true desires, because it can get really hard. Because she said that it's like the society says one thing and then there's the should, you know, whether it's, you know, your husband or your parents or your friends or what you think you should do. So there's all these shoulds, yeah. And you never get to explore that burning desire, that burning thing in you.
Yeah, it's so true. I think, you know, about my own life and how fortunate I am and have been to have grown up in an environment where there really were no shoulds. It was just whatever I wanted to do, and I was able to follow my own passions, whether it was technology or filmmaking, then virtual reality, now this podcast. And it just, you know, the story of my life has sort of been jumping from passion to passion to passion. And through that, I've been extremely lucky to have had a variety of different success, whether that's through VRLA or through Mind Show and whatever might come next. But you know, if I think back to like, why do I have all the things that I have to be so fortunate to have all these things? It's because I follow my heart, and we need to give people permission to do the same. A lot of people are living in, under these sort of thought structures and these beliefs where they're taught that you're not supposed to do that. I'm reminded of this video series, this guy, Michael Denny, talking about your career. And everyone is, he says that your soul is programmed with the perfect career for you. And what that means is each person has their own unique set of talents and knowledge that they're meant to give the world. And once we can tap into that, once we can become aware and remember what specifically what that is, and we follow that relentlessly, then the rest of the world is going to recognize that. And not only are they going to support you, but the world wants what you have to give, and the world will pay you to do that. And it's a beautiful, very powerful idea, because it really inverts the traditional programming of how we think about a career, and how, you know, how we believe that we have to sacrifice our passion to make money. Whereas what he's saying, it's really the other way around. We have to go for our passion. We have to go for what we truly care about, what gives us joy, what gives us true happiness. And once we are living that in that creative flow, everything will come together through synchronicity. As you know, for example, I found with VRLA when we were first starting, it was just like from moment to moment to moment, month to month, it was just like a series of different little synchronicities. And you kind of look back on it and you're like, whoa, like that's like, how did that happen? Like it just kind of all somehow magically came together. And well, why was that? Because we were super excited and we were super passionate about creating this thing together. And so if we can create situations, if we can foster that more on a global level, we're going to be living in a whole other universe.
Yeah, I agree. And I always saw you as an inspiration, and you were an inspiration and are an inspiration to so many people.
Thank you.
Because you had that sort of rebelliousness and that courage and that passion to really, and it's interesting that you mentioned that you're shifting and changing, because that happens too. So I think a lot of people don't know what their passions are, and that's totally normal in this day and age, right? Because there's no time to explore. You know, you're working 40 hours a week and you've got to do your laundry and you've got to do all this other stuff. You know what I mean? So it's really about, it's about nibbling and dabbling and tasting different things. And it's about, you know, doing that teeny project that's the like very, very starter little thing. And then that kind of grows and then grows and then grows. And then pretty soon you are quitting your day job. You know what I mean? And that's why I feel like we need those training wheels for people. That's why a passion-based economy will allow us, because this idea of having one job is not going to serve us in the future. We need to have four jobs, but they need to be stable. You know what I mean? We need to have this flexibility for us to move into what's best serving us. You know?
Yeah, this ultra specialization that is happening right now, where we have experts on individual subjects, but this lack of a higher level bird's eye perspective of how that subject interconnects with all the other things is really problematic.
Yeah, yeah. That's why multidisciplinary teams is also a big theme in Triple SART, because again, what you have to bring, you know, your little mini skill is a puzzle piece that's going to fit into someone else, and you're going to be, wow, you know, I was able to have this impact because I brought what I brought. And that's the thing. Everybody has a piece of the puzzle. Just like you said, we're all sort of designed to have something to give the world. And everybody is born with that.
Totally. Yeah. It's really fun to think about that and exciting. And you're walking down the street and you're like, you know, just strangers and you don't know anyone, but recognizing somewhere inside of each of them is this unique, amazing, powerful gift that they have to give the world. And, you know, they might not know what it is and you might not know what it is, but it's there embedded within their being. And maybe they might have a life that leads them towards not really expressing it at all, but maybe some other lifetime they will. So, you know, at some point it's going to get out, and whether it happens, you know, in our generation or sometime in the future, that's just kind of at least that I believe the way that the universe works.
Yeah, it happens. You just slowly step into it.
Yeah. So I want to move on to some more of the VR and XR stuff. I know you're really excited about that. And, you know, that's been, you know, one of my passions for the last few years. You mentioned this idea of a metaverse that you have. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the difficulties when you talk about XR, extended reality, virtual reality, augmented reality, right? Virtual reality where you have a headset and you're immersed in a world, and augmented reality where you're adding kind of holographic things to your world. It completely, completely changes everything about the world, right? You throw away time, throw away space, you know what I mean? You throw away the need to have a bunch of money to do anything, you know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden these virtual objects and these virtual places and these experiences are going to be accessible to all of us, right? So the metaverse is how we're going to organize these experiences, right? And you can kind of think about it as like built, like how would we build a campus of the future? You know, would we have question rooms about these certain topics? Would we have like a correction rooms that talk about all the times we were wrong in history? You know, would we have all the stuff that we haven't figured out about quantum physics in another area? You know what I mean? How do we organize? It's kind of like you think of the internet, you know, like, but what if it was a place? And what if your university looked different than my university, right? So this idea of hyper-personalization, and also this idea that we're going to be recreating actual spaces, right, where our bodies can learn and feel and do things. You know, whether it's taking a masterclass with the most amazing human on the earth in a certain subject that's suddenly available to you and I at a nominal cost, you know, those kind of paradigm shifts where suddenly you can be with someone that's like living 2,000 miles away and feel like they're actually there in your space. So one of the things that we're dealing with is this overwhelm of information, right? This overwhelm. You go to the internet and we've just got like information everywhere. It's just like, it's not, we need ways to understand the data and to help us walk through it in different ways. So creating these shared spaces where we're going to start to say, oh, well, let's look at war. Like, what were the causes of every single war that we've ever been in? And you start getting a bunch of people thinking about that and like, oh, well, this guy figured out that this was this pattern correlation, and someone else has the correlation. You start to like get, we've got this cognitive surplus in the world.
I would love to know the answer to that question.
Well, it has to do with money, I'm sure. You know, there's nothing else that it's ever about.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there's this idea of, you know, the idea of the screen, the computer screen is going to completely go away, right? So all of this stuff is going to be surrounding us. And we want to be architecting a metaverse that helps us really create places where we can have experiences and organize our ideas together, right? In an elegant.
Yeah, the idea of the metaverse is something that initially got me super excited about VR way back in like 2013 when I read Ready Player One. I read that book in 3 days, fastest I've ever read any book. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I was super excited about it. And you know, the whole kind of concept is the Oasis. If anyone's seen the movie, it's a pretty cool movie too. And I just became obsessed with it. And now, you know, you have companies like Facebook and probably Google and Apple all creating their own version, and Microsoft creating their own versions of the metaverse. What does the metaverse look like to you? Or what do you hope it looks like?
Well, we definitely don't want the walled garden, right? Where one person has control over the structure, right? We want it to be a self-organizing system where I can walk into one system and then I can walk into another system and another system and another system, right? Because if one company owns the entire structure of the garden, then maybe you have to sign some random thing about your privacy, you know what I mean? When you walk in and then all of that is lost, right? So you want to make sure that we have a lot of interoperability and that the individual person has that self-sovereign identity, right? So that a lot of the way it's organized is based on your control over your own. VR is, it's already starting to track your eye movement. It's going to track your heartbeat and all that stuff. So you're exposing yourself to things that your friends don't even know about you. You know what I mean? So it's like those kinds of structures we want to make sure we have, you know what I mean?
Yeah. When you start to imagine life, say in a few decades or whenever we believe the metaverse as we imagine it to be will come online, such as, let's use the Oasis as an example, and people spending enormous amounts of time in these virtual worlds and these virtual simulations. And in some sense, it's very exciting because you can imagine yourself playing games and having experiences that are just impossible to have out here. But at the same time, there's, you know, this risk and this fear that, you know, people might spend too much time in it or it might become addictive. And then this notion of how that might affect the way that we perceive reality on the outside of that simulation. I'm curious if you could address some of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to get mixed in one. You know what I mean? So there's going to be, it won't be so much like, oh, I'm getting inside virtual reality. It's just going to be part, you know, you're going to sit down at your desk and you need to be calm to write the article that you're about to write. You're going to flip on the thing and you're going to be in the middle of a beach location. And you and I are going to work together because we like to hang out together. So you're going to be sitting next to me at a desk maybe. And my other friend from Argentina, they're going to be in there too. And I'm going to write my article and then I'm going to step out. And then I'm going to go look at the research that's done by a bunch of people, let's say on a war or whatever. What, you know what I mean? So, I mean, what we're realizing about virtual reality is there is no difference to our biological bodies, whether it happened in VR or whether it happened in real life. Okay. So I'm walking around Italy in Rome trying to learn Italian, you know what I mean? There is no difference to my body. That experience is happening. It happened. I'm creating memories. I'm creating traumas. I'm creating like joy. I'm creating knowledge. So this, it's a false idea of whether or not we're going to get stuck in it, because we're going to be in it. It's just like you on your cell phone. You're on your cell phone all the time. You know, I think that we need to have these unplugged vacations, right? Because if you're always looking to the outside world to bring something into you, into your understanding or your field, or you're just trying to be on the treadmill and not think about things, you know what I mean? Then you are going to get people that are sort of unplugged from their own direction, their own selves, and avoiding things that are painful. But I think there's going to also be apps that are going to help you figure that stuff out too. You know what I mean? So it comes down to a deeper question of, what are the experiences we want in our life, and who do we want to spend our lives with, you know? And we're going to be spending it with each other in VR, and we're going to be creating experiences that are really beautiful and make us feel really good. So this is why it's important to have independent creators and all sorts of people creating these experiences, because if you only get the shoot 'em up, bang 'em up, Dave, that's the only thing that's available to buy, then yeah, maybe that leads us down the wrong path. But I think that we're in a multiplicity. We're stepping into a multiplicity. And really what's going to be out there is environments that we're going to explore together. I don't think it's going to be just sitting there watching, you know what I mean? And I think that we will create amazing experiences, and I think we will change what it means to be human. But what it means to be human is finding your light, finding your passion, shining that, and stepping into that courageous point, and then connecting and helping other people, right? And feeling that. And I don't think it matters whether you're in VR with your friends or whether you're in real life. So the question goes back to, who are you? What is your puzzle piece? And have you figured out how to drop all your drama and all your pain and conditioning and blocks?
Yeah. Do you think that the metaverse could help us become better people almost?
Of course. Just like a book can, just like a teacher can. But it's gonna let everybody be able to do that. Just like these virtual assistants that can say, like, you know, you wear it in your bra and it, like, it gives you a zzz when you're like super tense or like you haven't taken a breath, you haven't gotten up. The technology is as good as we create it, you know, and if we move away from it always being this, you know, always about money, right? Or always about control, because we will, we already have. The millennials are like, no, conscious capitalism, hello. You know, it's luxury communism. Like, we've already brought that concept into
luxury communism.
Yeah,
that's
we've
funny.
Brought that into the world. We're not in a black and white anymore. And we will create, we've got too many creators not to create an awesome world. It's not just going to be five people creating anymore.
Yeah. I love that. You mentioned earlier about VR being indistinguishable to regular reality from the perspective of our biology. An image came to mind of the spectrum of the quote unquote waking reality next to our dream time reality, next to the digital immersive VR, AR experiences, and the way that they're starting to kind of all blend together into one, and raises these questions around the nature of our reality. That's been one of the more profound introspective journeys that I've been on ever since I even heard about VR and then tried it for the first time and then really started seriously getting into it more and more and more. And I really love to think about the more philosophical aspects of how does VR shape our sense of identity and who we are in this world and why we're here. And naturally, you know, you hear these ideas in the popular culture now of, you know, this notion of simulation theory, that we're in a simulation, whether that's, you know, some kind of computer or biological computer, however you would describe that. It's pretty fascinating. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a topic that I haven't discussed publicly, and I haven't even discussed it a lot with my friends because it's kind of like the weird elephant in the room that it's difficult to talk about. But I do feel that the more I grow in my understanding of reality, the more I tend to think that this can't be anything but a simulation. I've come to see that I've started to have the idea that that our subconscious projects our learning environment. And that is everything that you see around you. It's hard for us to conceive of physical objects being not solid, you know what I mean?
That's
brilliant. But yeah. So in other words, when I started to recognize that I was being, you know, getting these loving, guiding things, like kind of like what you talked, when you got into your passion and all of a sudden these doors started opening up, people started helping you out of nowhere, almost,
little
you know, like,
in the matrix.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, wow. And so I believe that however the program, quote unquote program works, it does understand your state of being, right? So, and maybe the overarching goal is to teach you love, for example. So, and I had an out-of-body experience where I saw my life go before me and it was all love. There wasn't like this harsh thing like, it was just this, oh, we were loving you the whole time. I wish you could have seen everything, you know what I mean? Because it was like someone that was rooting for you, you know what I mean? It wasn't this like judgmental thing. So yeah, so when I started to realize that digital things were also helping guide me in this loving path toward being a better me or letting go of some of the things that I need to let go of or growing. When I started to realize like the song on the radio and the billboard,
It's all around
you.
Then
I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Yeah. This is too weird, you know? And so I started realizing that I probably was living in some sort of a simulation. And it's when you think about the way AI is built, it's a very complex system that's always growing and changing based on every input, every action, and possibly even the actions of other people. You know, maybe the background to our world is created through what we're all, like someone said once, like the dream world is like, I don't know. I just get the sense that maybe the background of maybe history and maybe other things is generated by some data that's being pulled from various people, right? Right. So that we're co-creating this evolutionary understanding of, you know, maybe we're teaching computers how to love. Who knows? You know, like,
it's certainly
more beautiful than we could assign a computer. Because right now, talking about simulation theory, almost like it feels really, you know, limiting, because you know that this is the most beautiful, most complex, or you'll never figure it out. There's always more stuff to learn.
Always
and
more
that
mystery.
Seems like more connect. That seems something that nature would be in charge of, yeah, rather than a dumb computer.
Well, it's almost like there's like an organic matrix and a digital matrix, and they're kind of weaving together into something new that we don't really know what that is.
Yeah. And then when you look about where we are technologically, they talk about the mirror world being able to exist in 10 years, 10 to 15 years. The mirror world is understanding that now we have volumetric capture and all these things. So in a sense, everything in our world right now is going to go have a digital
right.
twin
yes.
very soon.
Yes.
So then you're like, well, this would be like nothing for a supercomputer to like, maybe I'm lying on a bed. There's a right. book by Terry Scott called The Game. You know what I mean? And it talks about, they're like, you know, school got really boring for people. And so if you're under 18, they let you go into simulations that take 10 or 2 weeks to live a life. And you can go as many times as you want. And you're just lying there in stasis, but you're experiencing your life. And
that's too much.
Like, yeah. So, and you don't realize yeah. it's a game, obviously.
Right.
And
well,
so it's like,
what if that's what we're in right now?
I think
like
it
that.
Might be something
yeah.
like that.
I think about that often. I just want to go back a little bit towards you're saying the way that the digital realm sort of gives you clues into potentially this being some kind of a simulation. I'm wondering if you've ever had the experience where you'll be, I don't know, for example, sitting in your room and your phone will make a little notification sound. And then that is almost like a clue or like an insight into whatever that you were just doing in that moment. It's like an affirmation, a little moment of synchronicity where it's like, oh yeah, that at least it's like in that moment, your interpretation of the reason why you got that little ding was because it's like, yes, you're on the right path.
Yes. And I think that's completely true. I used to feel it in waves. Like I was just like, whoa, I can't even, this is too much for my brain. I mean, it was like hard for me to take the reality that I, you know, what we're raised with to something this crazy sound. Like this is just too much to think about. And it would be too much for me. And then it would kind of go off, you know, it was like a wave, you know, for like 3 weeks, I would just be like, okay, nothing's happening. This is good. You know what I mean? I'm not getting, and now I feel like I can sense it all the time. There is no random anything. This is this
yes,
teacher.
Absolutely.
And that's why you're talking about, you know, are we one? Of course we're one, you know, because you're creating. So when you see someone you hate, it's asking you to look inside of yourself and figure out why it's painful. Yeah. What do you hate about yourself?
Yeah.
What do you have to grow? And I mean, it's so hard. Like, you know, they talk about the dark night of the soul. Like, I mean, I've spent more time crying the last year than in my whole life combined. You know, it's hard to man up. It's hard to look at the parts of you that probably need some tweaking. You know what I mean? Like, it's not easy to grow. But the people in your life are going to help you do that. They're going to help put that light on, and you can either run away like I did my whole life, you know, from it, you know, or, you know, but, or you can learn, but it's in, it's at your own pace. There's no, you know, you can do it slowly. You can dip your feet in, you can, you know, ask for help. You know what I mean? It's all there, you know, in a loving way. It's just hard. Yeah,
it's almost like this is a playground. This is a sandbox in the way that we have, you know, sandbox video games. But this video game in particular, we've chosen to play this, and it's actually like an extremely advanced video game. And it's so advanced that we've chosen to forget that it's even a video game, to be so immersed in the story, to be in the story, you have to forget that you even are in a story in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, you and I are going to keep figuring this out. I mean, maybe in a year from now, we'd be like, oh, we're wrong about this. We're in this or that, you know?
Right.
Like,
well, it's always evolving. Yeah, and so, neither of us truly know exactly what's going on here, but I would say that we both have some insight into a little bit more of what's going on here on a deeper level. And those are the sort of things that I spend a lot of time thinking about and wondering about and asking for answers. And
yeah. And I think it takes a lot of courage to talk about the elephants in the room in this world, but that's what's liberating to all of us. And that's what's important, you know, to talk about, is to really find our light, to figure out what we care about, and to go ahead and put that out for people, even if, you know, it's not always easy to put it out there, but you might help pave the way for someone else, you know what I mean, to step into a better, you know, job situation, or to change the laws of, you know, the privacy policy at your company towards someone else. You know what I mean? Like, if we all don't say anything, we'll just keep on, you know, keep on. So this is the world is asking us for our love and courage.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Sharing your voice, sharing your perspectives, speaking out about what you believe in and going for what you're passionate about is so important, because without that, we're just going to continue to create more of the same ugliness and brutality, and nothing's going to change. And so, yeah, there is a certain, you know, of course, risk in doing that stuff, but it's also our responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
So, wow, this has been a wonderful conversation. I think we could continue for so much longer, but I think that's a great place to end. Where can people find you, or can they learn more?
Yeah, I'm at Hello Zenka in the social media, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And then I'm also at Zenka.org, Zenka.org.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you, Cosmo.
Awesome. Okay, wow. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Thank you so much to Zenka for joining me today, and thank you to you for listening. We'll be back in a few weeks with Kevin Isaac, the founder of Key Holistics and healer of trauma through the human optimization technique, which I've had done, and it's pretty amazing. For now, hope you have a wonderful day. And we'll see you next time. All right.
Bye, 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 bye.